land resident, of course, I think familiar to a lot of people, is Gary Gibson, who is the concessionaire there. Morning, Gary.
Good morning, sir.
To start out with, let's perhaps we have some people out there that aren't 100% familiar with who you are, what you do, what a concessionaire is, and that kind of thing. So maybe we could just kind of start there. Who's Gary Gibson?
Well, I guess the primary job of a concessionaire is to provide for the visiting public in a more direct manner. We're charged with the responsibility of feeding and housing any guests that come up to Stehekin, basically. We rent or pay a franchise fee for the use of the government buildings and basically operate under Park Service regulations.
Okay. Recently, there's been some concerns, I guess, expressed on the part of many, including the General Accounting Office, and some land acquisition policies and those kinds of things. Do they affect your operation in a direct or indirect manner at Stehekin?
Well, yeah, they do, because one of the things that was recommended in the GL report was to have the concessions facilities returned to private hands. And so, of course, there is that possibility, but it hasn't been decided as yet. And one of the things we're doing now is trying to get people understand that what happens at this point is that we need to have a congressional oversight hearing, and then Congress will eventually make the determination as to whether the Park Service will retain control up there or whether it'll go back into private hands.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the concession and the specific facilities that you have there. A surprising number of people from around here don't get to Stehekin that often. I'm surprised even the number of people I run into that have never been to Stehekin and have been fairly long-time Chelan residents. Let's talk a little bit about what it is that you operate there, what it is the government has that you operate for them.
Well, of course, we have 27 rooms. We can house up to 65 to 70 people overnight. We have a restaurant that seats 40, and we will feed anywhere from 150 to 600 people a day. We have a small grocery store that serves the basic necessities. We have, of course, the marina and a gift shop, and we serve gas. And basically, try to provide for just about any request that would come up. It's really just a resort under the very stringent management of the National Park Service.
What do you mean by that? You've mentioned twice now under the rules of the Park Service, and then you said the very stringent management. What kinds of management directives do you have?
Well, I could probably fill this whole room. Primarily, virtually every move that I make as a businessman has to be approved by the federal government, the National Park Service. They set my rates. They tell me what hours I can operate. I can make recommendations and suggestions, but for the most part, they have the final authority. They have to approve all advertising. I, of course, have control over my staff and some control over what kind of items we serve. But for the most part, the only thing I can do, really, is to make recommendations to the National Park Service, and then they make most of the final determinations.
I think, like anything, probably dealing with a... hesitate to use the word bureaucracy, but I guess I have to. I don't know what else fits. Dealing with that kind of organization, we'll get around it, has layer upon layer of bodies, you know, working, doing various functions, that would have to be difficult. Is that, I noticed, you know, you talked to the Chamber Board yesterday, you consented to come here, you're obviously, you've either had it up to here, you know, kind of a little frustrated or, you know, that must be the motive, I guess.
Well, yeah, basically it is. We're having a tremendous amount of problems up there right now. The GAO report basically has brought everything out in the open, and it's given us a forum from which to operate now. I have complaints, of course. I have questions more than anything else. Everybody in the valley has some questions. This GAO report has turned friend against friend. It's caused a lot of turmoil. We need a forum from which to operate, and basically all I'm doing right now is trying to get people to recommend to Congress to have the oversight hearings, because from that maybe we can get some answers to a lot of questions that people have and get this thing moving again. Concerns about the concession in particular. When my wife was back in Washington, D.C., the Conference of National Park Concessionaires, which has Glacier, it's a place where all the concessionaires get together. It's an organization. And the groups that have the large concessions have told us that a concessionaire, a small concessionaire such as myself, will probably last maybe 10 years before we are so regulated that we won't be able to operate. We're trying to get some of these regulations removed and reduced so that in the event Congress decides for the National Park Service that we can continue to operate up there and operate successfully and maybe someday provide the services that are needed, because at the present time one of the biggest contentions is that the Park Service feels that what we're doing is adequate. My contention is that we haven't even started to meet the needs of the public.
What do you mean by that? Give us some specifics. Have you proposed a certain thing that hasn't happened?
You've been up there during lunchtime, and the Lady of the Lake will dock. If it's a bright sunny day, of course we can feed the 300 people that are getting off the boat.
Outside.
But when it rains up there, what do you do with 300 people when you have a restaurant that only seats 40? That facility is not adequate, and when we first went up there 3 years ago, we told the Park Service it was not adequate, and we wanted to make some changes. So far...
Using whose money?
Well, we were going to use my money and the Park Service's money in that case.
Okay.
But we did propose to do a lot of things with our own money, and we estimated the expense to be somewhere around $200,000. That was to put a cocktail lounge in and to take the Golden West Lodge and turn it into a hostel, put a Hofbräu in it, and open up the lunchroom up there, and put a recreation area. And then working from that base, which is a money-producing part of the business, we could start adding additional services that really don't produce an income, but there's something you need. They're axillary services that produce income indirectly because they make people stay there longer. And our contention was, when we came up there, that the place is not growing, and I think we can show that it hasn't. Pretty soon, the cost of operation is going to outrun its ability to make an income, and I think we can show that pretty clearly and concisely right now. So, by at least providing the services that people need, we can realize a decent income, and we can afford to pay for some of the other services that people would like to have up there. We have, for example, an overnight visitation rate of 46% during the busy part of the season.
You mean an occupancy rate?
Occupancy rate. The number of people that stay overnight there. And of course, everybody understands that produces the biggest amount of income. That figure should be a lot higher than that in order for the business to survive. I think everybody can understand that our cost of operation is a lot higher too because of where we are. We've discussed these with the Park Service for the past 3 years, and I must say that it's been only recently, since the advent of the GAO report, that we've started to make some headway. So we're hoping that it will continue.
Okay. You also have an interest in Chelan Airways. It would occur to me that if if what you're saying comes true, that is a decrease in permanent population up there for various reasons, a decrease in the services that have been provided traditionally at the landing, and a potential decrease in your services, you know, if things were to continue the way you're saying and projecting out, you know, for say 10 years, that there no longer would be a need for the airways on a year-round basis, and be a marginal operation maybe for the boat company on a year-round basis.
Well, of course, I can't speak for the boat company, but as far as Chelan Airways is concerned, we were contemplating 2 years ago whether or not to run, I should say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, contemplating whether or not to run the airways on a year-round basis. If the population in Stehekin were to decrease much farther, we would have to reconsider that again, which is really too bad, because if someone were to get sick up there or injured and there wasn't an airplane, we might have a real serious situation. It would make it a little more risky to live in Stehekin. There is a definite connection between the business community at Stehekin, which basically is me, I guess, and Chelan. That's another thing I've been trying to help people understand. In my letter to the chamber, through some scratch pad figures, I came up with a figure of about $800,000 in lost income for the people in Chelan and myself, because of the fact that tourism really hasn't grown much. And
you contend that's because of facility.
I contend that it's basically because of lack of facility, and we can prove that through our contacts with the public. They'll call up and they'll say, "Well, gee, we can't get a room in Chelan. We'd like to come up to Stehekin." And my secretary will start telling her what we provide up there, and the list is rather short of things for people to do. And they say, "Well, thanks. We prefer to go somewhere else. We need some additional services. We need, my kids like to swim. My wife and I would like to have a drink before dinner." People get tired of just hiking day in and day out. And, of course, we really don't provide much more than just that, hiking and fishing. We need to provide for those needs, because the National Park Service really is charged with providing services for everybody. And they do in other parks. Glacier has swimming pools, golf courses, saunas, all kinds of services for the public. And what we're trying to do, and have been since we took over the concession, is to provide these services, or be allowed to provide. And therein lies the basic contention between myself and the Park Service.
Okay. The GAO report, let's get back to that a little bit. We've done a number of news stories on it, chatted with a lot of people about it. Your point when you said turn friend against friend is interesting, because I think I've reported that and sort of observed that. I think I've seen the valley, the, I don't know, 80 to 100 residents that are there, something like that, in kind of a constant state of turmoil. They don't know from day to day what's going on. Has the GAO report been able to clear that up, or is it a step in that direction, or has it muddied the water further, but hopefully it will be clarified down the pike somewhere?
Well, you have to make the incision before you can take out the appendix, whatever's causing the problem. No, the GAO report has really muddied the water. The employees of the National Park Service, discussions with two of them in particular, they feel that nobody up there wants them, that everybody is fighting to get rid of them personally. In other words, everybody's taking this as something very personal. And, of course, the people on the other side, but for different reasons. Two friends can sit down and have a beautiful conversation, except when it comes to the GAO report. And then it becomes a rather traumatic experience for both parties, and I've seen that happen a couple times. If it were to drop right now, I think that would be the worst thing that could possibly happen to the Valley, because the questions the charges have been made, but they haven't been answered, and nothing has come of it. So it would just remain in limbo, and it'd be years before something like this could solve itself without some help from Congress.
The viability of the concession there, the business that it is you operate, certainly has impact on the economic viability, I would think, of the entire valley, in that you're one of only a couple of three private businesses that I can think of up there, four or five, I guess, that provided employment for those who choose to live there.
Are you asking me, is it viable now?
I'm basically asking, it would occur to me that the success or failure of the business means basically the success or failure of a whole bunch of people that decide to live there because they derive their income from working for you, being paid by the hour, so on and so forth. Is that correct? How many people do you employ?
Yeah, well, in the summertime, we employ about 26 people. Most of them are not Valley residents. I think we have maybe 8 people. But for the most part, of course, they do depend, at least in part, on the income provided from their working at the lodge. And if that were to cease to exist, of course they would be hurt. How badly, I don't really know.
A couple of people have hit me with this one the last couple of days. They say, General Accounting Office report comes out, talks about Stehekin, big turmoil there. Forest Service comes out and says, no, nothing's going to happen at Lucerne. Two must be connected. There's got to be a grand conspiracy. I don't think I really believe that at all, but do you see the two as being, one, interrelated, and two, do you see, how do you view, personally, as a concessionaire, basically a competitor, if you will, just 8 or 10 miles up the pike, the situation at Lucerne Resort?
Well, having a competitor at Lucerne, I don't really know. It's proved more beneficial than detrimental in the past. I would be ecstatic if we could have a competitor up there at Stehekin, because competition is not one of those things where you go out and try to do your buddy in. It's one of those things that if you're both going to survive, you're going to have to work together, and you're going to have to go out after the business together. And actually, I think you increase your chances of financial viability and survival by having competition. So I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea. It's a good system. It's been around for a long time, and it's worked well here.
Did you go to Washington, or just the wife?
Just Linda went.
Okay. Has she commented to you, perhaps we should be talking to her, has she commented to you about the economic climb back there and what kinds of things she was hearing? I've talked recently to a couple of people who have been in Washington that seem to say, get us a letter if you find something about government waste or anything else, and we'll really jump on it, because that's the in thing to be doing right now. Did she come back with that kind of feeling?
Oh, very definitely. There's a tremendous change in Washington, D.C., and it showed up very clearly when Mr. Watt addressed the National Park concessionaires. I guess it was one standing ovation after another, and that has never really happened before. Everybody has a very positive approach. The businessmen are just ecstatic. Everybody's extremely happy. I think everybody is really hoping that the change in administration back there is going to do some real good. Everybody feels like there's a chance now to get this country turned around, and it showed back there very definitely.
And so do you think that now is politically the right time for you to be doing exactly what it is you're doing right now?
It's the only chance I have. If we don't take advantage of this forum, I feel that the prospects for Stehekin are not very good. It's got to happen now. That's the way I'm approaching it, and I think that's the way a lot of people are approaching it. We have, if you've read the GL report, there are some things, after reading it, on both sides that I felt were statements that were not correct. And I would hope to have an opportunity to testify in the hearings, to point some of these things out. And by the way, we're working now, of course, to get the GO heard, but we're also working to get the report or get the committee to come to Wenatchee and convene down there, which would give everybody in Stehekin an opportunity to go down and testify, and anybody in Chelan who would be interested.
Okay. The General Accounting Office cranks out study after study after study, and plan after plan after plan, and they become like so many other plans and studies, just fillers on somebody's bookshelf somewhere. I can't remember how many they crank out a week, but they crank out a number a week. What makes this one so unique, and what are the possibilities of congressional oversight hearings? I mean, just because there's something that came out that had green pages front and back and had General Accounting Office on it, it doesn't mean that, you know, the thing's going to Congress.
Well, unique, I guess, because it's one of the first of the reports that I can remember in recent history where the Park Service has just flatly denied to do anything about it, period. In fact, my wife was the first one to find out. She met with Mr. Albright 1 hour after the park made that decision. And that's rather strange, because in all the other reports that have come out before, the Park Service has at least made the attempt to comply with some of the recommendations of the GAO. In this particular one, they have said, no way, we're not going to do a thing. And the reason is because this one is probably the hottest one politically that they've ever had, because while we're only talking about a few acres of land, it's Stehekin to be returned to the private sector. There is some feelings that this could balloon into something that could cover almost all of the national parks, and of course the park has never ever given a piece of property back to the private sector that I'd know about. And the other thing is of course, only 3% of these reports get before Congress anyway. And I guess this is the first one that I felt strongly enough about to go out and actually tell people about it, and to get them to show their concern by writing their congressman or whoever and asking that it be reviewed. And, of course, that's the American way. Charges are made. We need a forum to discuss the charges. They need to be answered, and decision needs to be made. I see nothing wrong with that.
Guest this morning on Radio Lake Chelan's Second Cup of Coffee program is Gary Gibson, and we'll be back in just a moment. Third, and we're chatting this morning with Gary Gibson, who is the concessionaire in Stehekin at the North Cascades Lodge. Gary, in your efforts to arouse some, or solicit, I guess, some comment to Congress concerning the GAO report, where do you go from here? What do you do? You've talked to the Chamber Board. What happens now?
What happens for me?
Yeah.
I don't have the slightest idea what's going to happen for me. After this, I think it's just more or less a sit-and-wait proposition, because really nothing can be done until the report's heard in front of the Oversight Committee. I think the best thing that we can do at this point is maybe try to solve a lot of the problems by sitting down and having discussions among ourselves and really trying to iron out our feelings about what's going on up there, and separate some of the emotional issues from some of the factual issues, and just see if we can develop some kind of a working relationship, because even if the GAO report is heard and Congress were tomorrow to say, give it back to the public, we still will have a concessions operation up there for quite a few years to come. And we need to work towards getting some improvements up there. But for the most part, outside of that, it's just sit and wait.
You sincerely believe that the future of Stehekin is at stake. That is, that it's going to go down the tube if something doesn't happen.
That's my own personal view, yes, I do. I think it's that serious. And I think to get into why I think it's that serious would take up a tremendous amount of time. But we could leave it at that. Yes, I do feel it's that serious.
Okay. As you meet people on the street or just chatting with them, how you go about soliciting their letters to Washington, that somebody that maybe has never, hasn't had an opportunity to say to read the GAO report, what do you say? Just how do you bring a beginner along, someone that's not familiar with the whole issue, I guess?
That's really hard because I had a lot of background in what was going around up there. And it took me three or four times through the GAO report before I could even understand what was going on. I don't know. The only thing you can do is just sit down and find out what their concerns are and explain as well as you can what you think should go on. And then to be fair about it, if say, well, write the National Park Service. Get their side too before you start jumping on one side or the other. But what I'm talking about right now has nothing to do with right or who's right or who's wrong. All I want is to have people be concerned enough to write and have the hearings. And that you can do that without expressing an opinion or a belief on either side of the question, the GAO or the Park Service side. In other words, charges are made. You need a forum to hear the charges. The charges need to be answered, and then a decision made. It's a very standard process in this country. I think you can do that without getting emotional about it.
You indicated earlier that some of the things that you may want to do with the concession to accommodate more people may have you're making some headway. Since the GAO report is out. In other words, you have a receptive ear with the Park Service. Is that what I read into what you said?
They seem to be more receptive right now than they have in the past. And I really believe it's probably because of the GAO report. The Park Service, I'm not against the Park Service, for heaven's sakes. I feel they've done a lot of good. But, of course, they respond to the people that they hear from. And the people they have heard from, their feelings are that they don't want anything in Stehekin. They don't want a swimming pool. They don't want a cocktail lounge. They don't want expanded lodging facilities. I mean, like the Golden West Lodge. They're not concerned about having the visitation increased. And, of course, if that's the only argument that the National Park Service hears, of course, that's the one they're going to go with. And that's not really the fall of the Park Service so much. It's the fall of the people who've been keeping their mouth closed for quite a while. If you aren't heard, then you really have nothing to complain about.
So you feel that the Park Service and others, no doubt, are responding to what they consider to be their national constituency.
I believe that's the term they're using now, yes.
Yeah. Okay. You really feel that the economic, political climate then is such that that one letter, the one comment, will be heard and considered?
I think so. We've had tremendous response from all the letters we've written. It takes about 2 weeks to get a reply back, but it's... they're coming back, and we're finding that they're just as concerned in Washington as we are out here, and I think that something will be done. Of course, the outcome is in question, but something's going to happen, and it can be nothing but good, no matter which way it goes.
Just to clear the water.
Just to clear the water, and I believe that there's enough people asking questions and presenting their ideas that we'll probably have a more balanced approach to the use of the Stehekin Valley in the future. And that's whether the National Park Service remains in control or whether some of the properties are returned to private hands.
Not being involved in your business at all, and just basically a casual observer, the opportunities that I've had in the summertime to be at the landing at boat time, when you got between 200 plus people coming off the big boat, and all of a sudden are there, clunk, I look around and I say, my gosh, what can you possibly do with these people? And if I'm not mistaken, I think I see a decreasing or trend. You know, you can blame it on a couple of things: price of gas, Mount St. Helens, whatever. But a decrease in the visitor use, or the people that I guess basically return or choose to return or stay up there for a period of time. Do you think it's because of that initial bad experience of basically coming off the boat in large numbers and then finding inadequate or what you say are inadequate services?
It's got to have an effect on them. Out of 35,000 people, let's say, that might visit Stehekin in the summertime, all but maybe 5,000 or 6,000 of those people will only be up there an hour and a half. So the only thing they see of the whole valley and of the operation up there is just what happens during lunch line. And quite frankly, it's not the best way to have lunch, herded off a boat, stand in line for 10 minutes to 20 minutes, and then go look for a place to sit down. But the economics of solving the issue right now are just not there, because it means expanding, adding additional buffet lines, putting more of our facility indoors so that we can use it more or less all the time, even during inclement weather. Of course, it's got to have an effect on them. They probably would rather go somewhere else. It's not like that all the time, of course, but that's the impression I'm sure that they're going away with, that that's the way it is, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It's kind of hard to change that idea right now.
Okay. Is there anything else along this line that maybe we haven't touched on that you thought that we should? I've got one more question I want to ask you that's totally unrelated to
it's unrelated
to the GAO thing or anything else. But
well, I can't really think of anything I'd want to add right now. I'm sure as soon as I leave I will.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's always the way it is. I wanted to ask you about being at Stehekin in December when it was raining and the snows were melting and the flood and mud and stuff all over the place. What was it like? Was there any, you know, the lake is going to be gigantic. People don't realize it yet, but we're going to have a real problem with drift this year. There's logs in that lake that are just humongous. There's drift all over the place. What was it like, all that stuff boiling out of the river and by the house and that kind of business?
Well, it was scary because the flood was really at my back door, and the water was actually higher than my property, so we were really expecting to have to live the night in the boat. Outside of that, we were trying also to run a business up there, cross-country skiing, and six people are standing in front of me with their skis wanting to know where they can go skiing, and what do you tell them? You know, it had a tremendous effect on us.
I hear all sorts of stories. People tying down Volkswagens to the tree because it was floating away, and this kind of, are those true?
Oh, yeah, you bet. One of my cars was so full of mud, we're still trying to get it out. It was right up to the door. The whole engine compartment was full of mud. Water was running through some people's homes. It was terrible. It was a real full-blown flood and did a lot of damage.
What will that do to your this year, to your visitor season? Anything? I know the upper valley probably will not be accessible by vehicle for fishing and whatnot for a while.
It's going to have a tremendous effect, because 50% of the people that stay at the lodge go all the way to the end of the road. And so, since we're starting out with limited activities for people, we've just reduced their limited activity by another 50%. There's only half the road left.
Yeah.
So we are concerned about what's going to happen this summer.
Okay. I want to thank you for coming in, Gary. We got a couple other things we got to get to. Appreciate your conversation and whatnot. Gary Gibson from Stehekin, and talking a little bit about the numbers of concerns that he has. He's a concessionaire there. It's 9 o'clock. This is KOZI Chelan, and I believe we'll be talking here momentarily with Representative Earl Tilley and Dick Nichol.